Yep. Hi, Debbie. Okay, so the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to get the link for the room.
Okay.
Let me see.
All right.
Let me remind
Hi,
myself.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Ellen.
Hello.
Ellen, replays, hand raising, share room.
Ellen, please forgive my tardiness. I promise you, you're on my list. I don't know if she has a mic yet. Let's see. Can I? Yeah. I just invited her to speak. So we'll get Ellen up there. There she is.
Yes, you should take care of that, Debbie.
Sure.
I'm getting the link to the room.
Yep.
Thanks. Hi, everybody. Thank you,
Debbie,
for that.
Hi, Ellen. How are you?
Oh,
I'm
okay.
So sorry.
I'm sure things are busy.
Well, it's not a good excuse. It is an excuse, but it happens to be true. Anyway, the world has just, suddenly started again, and everything we used to do during COVID is still there, and like shows and things like that. And yet we also have face-to-face meetings and all the other stuff coming in. So anyway, I wish I were faster, Ellen.
It's okay. Whenever you can manage. Oh, and just a heads up, Linda and everyone. I have a hard stop at 4:00. This is one of those weeks. So
okay. We should be okay. Yep. I know we have a lot of speakers today. Now let's see. Okay. I'm just going to wait for a few more people to come before I start giving the logistics. Let's see. And I think
I'm going to fix the automatic topics that they gave us, news and age, and make startups caregivers. I don't think they don't have robotics or any of the other cool topics we have today. Right, Debbie?
I think that's the right way to go. Yes.
I mean, not startups for today, right? So
not startups, no.
Topics. Caregivers.
There's Elizabeth. Elizabeth has an article today, I think. Yes. Okay. I'm bringing you up, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Debbie.
Absolutely. And you tell me when you're ready, Linda, and I'll do the logistics.
You can go ahead and do the logistics. I'm going to get that pinned, the web link into the chat and the pinned link.
Okay, excellent. Well, welcome everybody, and thank you for being here for our weekly News for the Ages show. Every Tuesday from 6 to 7 Eastern time. And here we basically, a few of us from the industry choose an article about poverty and or caregiving, and we report. We find interesting articles from journalistic sources, and we report on those, basically giving you a weekly news feed, if you will. I love this room because I get all kinds of wonderful talking points for meetings and for even for presentations and anything that I happen to be doing at that time. So I'm just going to walk over a few of the little logistics here. First of all, if you just scroll down, you'll see that you have a list of people there. And if they've got a hard green button on them, that means they're on Clubhouse right now. And you can easily just invite them. You can also see who was just on there, and you can give them a try as well. But just see who's on there. You'll see some of your friends and people you know. And if you think they might be interested in the room, you can just click invite, and that makes it really easy there to ask people to come. I'm seeing lots of people here who I recognize. So you can just go down the list. They've made it really easy for us. And then if you, I don't like pressing too many buttons. I'm nervous. I'm going to take myself out. Anyway, so let's just look at the page that you're looking at. You see the title of the room at the top, and then you see what we call the pinned link there with the visual. That's the way you can always get back to your to the LinkedIn post that tells everything about the room and has links to all the speakers and even resources that are related to the different articles. And I wanted to, go ahead, Linda.
No, I lost you for a minute. So I was.
Oh.
Was it just okay. me? Was it just I me don't, that lost you I, for a second? Everybody else? Know. Okay. I'm going to watch my own internet. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay. And then just look down. So that's the top of the screen. Then you'll see us as speakers in the middle and you see our attendees there. Linda has put some great information in the post about how to make sure you're joined up to the house. Clubhouse made us all houses a couple of weeks ago. I think it might have been three. And we're still working with that just to get everybody registered. So please take a quick read of Linda's instructions there. It's pretty easy. You just press on the three houses down at the bottom of your screen. You can't see them on this screen right here, but when you go into Clubhouse, you can see it. And just press on that. You'll see the Rethinking Aging Club logo. And when you get there, you can see that you can RSVP for events right there. And that's where you can also add an emoji to one of Linda's or anyone else's messages there in that house. And that will let us know you're there. If you can put your LinkedIn there in Linda's post, that's really helpful for us. You know, the reason we do that, it's not because we're gathering personal information. Excuse me. We're actually doing that because we want to know who's in here. Linda and I are pretty strict about that, and we don't want a bunch of spammers and Bitcoin sellers. It's fine if they want to do that somewhere else, but we don't really want that in our rooms. So that's the reason we like to know who's in here in our club. And we have over 1,600 members now. So we have to pay attention and make sure to protect you and your privacy and make this room something that you can enjoy coming to on a regular basis. As you go down the screen, you'll see the little icons for house members. And then we see George, you can see followed by the speakers. George, I have not followed George yet, but I'm going to go ahead and follow George. He's a guest today. You can always, while we're live in the room, look at the different people who are in here and see who you would like to follow and connect up with them. And then as you go down the page again, you can invite people if you keep scrolling. But let's go down to the bottom of the screen there. And hi, Cindy, I see that you joined. I had just pinged you in. Thank you so much for joining. And if you go down to the bottom of the screen, running across the bottom, you've got some icons there. You've got the chat icon, which I'm opening now, and I'm writing in welcome everyone there. It's a great way to add links or comments while we're doing the room. And you can also, I want to make sure that you know that this chat stays with the room recording. So that makes it really useful for other people as well. So if you have related links or again, questions for our speakers, just put them right there in the chat. And then you'll also see a little box with an arrow upwardly oriented. There's Gary. Hi, Gary.
Hello.
It's nice to see you. And you see the little box with the arrow there. You can just share right onto Clubhouse, what we call the hall. that lets other people on Clubhouse know we're live right now. And I'm just going to put that into the hallway there. You can also put it out on LinkedIn or Facebook as you would like. And the buttons make it really easy to do that. Then we have the scissors. The scissors are for taking a clip of the previous 30 seconds of what someone has said. So if you clipped it right now, you'd get the previous 30 seconds that I was saying. And that's useful for for LinkedIn posts and other social media posts. And Linda's got a great tutorial, again, in the pinned link at the top of the page, where you can learn how to use those clips. And it's really important to know that the clips are available. You can do the clips while you're listening to a replay. So you can literally listen to the replay link and say, wow, I know I heard something really good. Let me see if I can find that. You can find it, clip it, and use it on social media. So that's a really handy function. And again, Linda has got a great tutorial on that in our posting up at the top of the page. You won't need the little icon with the people because you can use that. You can easily use that. See, if you press on that, you'll see the hard green button there for people who are on right now, and you can just ping them into the room. And it makes it just really easy to do. So you can ping people into the room either way, by that way or scrolling all the way down. You won't need the clipboard today because we won't be bringing people up from the audience. You'll use the chat to ask your questions. Hi, Benjamin. Nice to see you. Yes. So that's about it. For those of us on stage, we always mute ourselves when we're not talking and unmute when we're talking. And you all in the audience are automatically muted, so you are relegated to the chat, but we are watching the chat constantly, so we will not miss you over there. So please be active in the chat if you have something to say. And Linda, I think that's probably about it.
Hey, Debbie, thank you so much. So I noticed that, I was in a room earlier today with Nozzle in the beta test house, where he was explaining and we were talking about the latest changes on Clubhouse. And I have put in the pinned link, and I am going to put in the chat. I was mentioning that Clubhouse is now on the web. So I just tried to paste too much there, so it didn't go. Just a second. What did I do here? But I will get that to you in the pinned link. It's all there. So The way to, I'm gonna just do this little pieces at a time. So to get Clubhouse on the web, you will go to clubhouse.com/sign-in. And I just put that into the chat. And this particular room, you cannot be on this at the same time that on your phone that you are on the web. So you would have to get off your phone and get on the web. But what you do if you're in any other room on Clubhouse and you want to know how to do this, you take, then this is a hack that we figured out during Nozzle's room. So you, because this is the web links all have a CH before the slash. So where you have room. So you see that I put in the chat now, that's the room, which I could not get until the room started. So I wouldn't be able to start it from the web yet for a scheduled room, unless I like coordinated with Debbie and had her start it or something. We might do that in the future. The advantage of hosting it from the web, and I think Debbie's going to really like this, is that you can totally use your laptop. And if you're into using podcasting mics and fancy stuff like that, you can do that. And the you can also not just go to a room, you can go just to all of your houses. So if you do that sign in, the clubhouse.com/sign-in, it'll take you to all of your houses where you could participate in the house wall chat. So, which is open 24/7. So I'm putting that here, and that may, it doesn't have the RSVPs, which I still want you to go into the house, please, and RSVP for our events as much as you can from inside the house. But this is our house on the web that I've just put in the chat. So you see that that's our regular house link with a CH before the slash house. So for all of you who love doing this on the web, that's what you have. So, okay.
And may I just say one thing for everyone? We owe Linda a great debt of gratitude for figuring all this out. She spends a lot of time figuring this out and going to Clubhouse, like, I don't know, larger meetings where they're talking about
the town halls that are every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific. But just to let you know, the town halls, last town hall and the next couple of town halls are not going to be terribly useful, and then they'll go back to being real town halls. So just for you to know, they gave us a one-liner at the beginning of the last town hall that Clubhouse is now on the web. And then they're just trying to do a gathering instead of a real town. We'll see what they do today. But the amazing thing about Clubhouse is that they have been so transparent in sharing their updates with us. They've been updating the app, as you know, telling us what they were doing. They're being extremely, extremely transparent. So right now they've got their heads down doing a bunch of stuff. And so they're not sharing as much for the next couple of weeks, but it'll come back. But they still want to have the gathering. And that's that. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for all that you do, honestly. And, you know, I know I personally, I have trouble with new tech. I'm just going to admit it. And I'm resistant, but Linda has made it pretty easy for me, and I really, really have a lot of time for everything that Linda has done for all of us, making it easier. Yeah, thanks, Linda.
Thank you. Okay, we want to have Benjamin Sermi first today. He has to get to something else, and we're so appreciative to him for being able to be here today at all. Thank you so much, Benjamin. Benjamin found an awesome article from MIT Technology Review by James Wright, who I now have been able to find his LinkedIn and was able to link it just before we started, which I couldn't do unless I was connected to him. He is in the UK, and I was having trouble connecting to him. But if you look at the pinned link, I have his LinkedIn there. And this is an article on why care robots have not taken off in Japan. And James Wright also has a book, a very important voice in our space. Benjamin Sermi from Kelch Communities, our favorite communities for older adults. Thank you, Benjamin.
Thanks, Linda. Thanks, Debbie. Preface this by saying I'm a very innovation, tech first kind of a guy. And so I have learned a lot being in a 65-year-old company, however, and I have had the privilege of getting to implement technology and finding, you know, found out through that process, sometimes technology doesn't actually solve problems. So I've become very different in my old age, you know, I have become very different in thinking through how important it is to pick the right tech for the right situation, because you cannot just throw technology at problems and hope that it solves it. You really have to be very strategic. It's often still human first with the technology, just the right tool, the right time. So this really kind of confirms what I've been learning over years now in a very decades old company that is slow moving and often is like, no, we don't need to try that new thing. You know, we've been doing this for a long time and it works, and has tempered some of that need to constantly innovate with some new technology. So what this researcher did is he spent 18 months doing ethnographic research in Japan to really see how are robots being used. He also based some of his article on a national survey of over 9,000 elder care institutions in 2019, and a 2021 study that sampled 444 people, because there had been over the decades a big push to create robots that would help with senior care. And millions of dollars, if not billions, were invested in that space to try to create robots to help with senior care. Because, and I'm forgetting the exact date, but in a date here soon, half of Japan will be older and half will be younger. And so they're kind of getting ready. It's by 2050. Every person over 65, there will be kind of the under 65 and over 65 will be equal by 2050. So they've been like, okay, how do we make sure we're ready for this, right? So let's build robots that can lift people. Let's build robots that can feed people. Let's build robot, right? And so this researcher said, okay, let's see how we're doing in 2023. Well, one of the things that he really highlights is that there's a growing body of evidence finding that robots tend to end up creating more work for caregivers. And to summarize the article, he basically says, what I found is that caregivers still had to do a lot of the same things they had to do before. However, they now had less time for the emotional component of caregiving because they were so focused on taking care of the robots too. And so he gives examples of how that worked out in practice. For instance, there was a robot that was supposed to help people exercise. And what he saw happening before his eyes was the residents wouldn't follow along with Pepper. Pepper was the name of this humanoid robot. It took a caregiver standing next to the robot, encouraging people to do what the robot was doing for people to actually participate in the exercise class. And the caregivers had to make sure it was booted up. The caregivers had to make sure it was plugged in. The caregivers had to make sure it was stored correctly. And after a while, it became boring because there was no creativity. It had the same set of routines it would do over and over again. He also checked out Hug, which was another robot that was focused on lifting people. And what he saw was just that it was so cumbersome to move from room to room that the caregivers slowly stopped using it and let it sit in a closet. And then Pero, the toy seal, which is supposed to keep people entertained, kind of keep people engaged, at first caregivers were pretty happy, but then they started to see behavioral challenges, such as residents trying to skin it, or residents developing such a close attachment they wouldn't do literally anything in their life without the seal by them. And so they didn't actually see it reducing repetitive behaviors. They still had to keep a close eye on the residents who were using it. So it wasn't freeing the staff up like people had thought it would. They still had to monitor the residents using it. And so what he noted was, instead of caregivers being actively engaged emotionally with residents, they would set robots like these in front of the residents and then still have to be in the room, still have to be monitoring. But instead of emotionally engaged with residents, they were now just passively monitoring this room with the residents with the robot. So it did nothing to reduce staff time and caring for people, but it did everything in removing more of the emotional connection between humans in the care process. So he is a pretty scathing review of what the status of robots in Japan. And he believes that robots are really a distraction from the core issues, which he names as Japan not being willing to really embrace a whole new immigration plan to bring new people into the country, and then also paying care workers better so people might actually want to work in that field. So he's naming those as two big elephants in the room, that the technology, focus on the technology ends up reducing focus on those two core issues at the heart of why there's going to be a real care crisis. So anyway, I thought it was fascinating to finally get an update, because I've been following Japan's move in robots for a long time and very excited about it. So this was kind of a little wake-up call for me. So thank you so much.
Wow, Debbie.
Yeah, of course. I am so fascinated with that article, Benjamin. And we are actually trying to get James Wright to be one of the speakers at the Independent Aging Conference in mid-October in Japan, because we like his controversial viewpoint. And it's true that, you know, they can help. Robotics can help, and also it can be a distraction. I love the way that you synthesize that, a distraction vying with higher pay and immigration issues. We all who are involved in Japan know that these are really important things. I'm interested to hear were they talking about mainly professional caregivers, did you think, or family caregivers? Because I think that those, I know the para and the first one you mentioned, they have had, Pepper. Yeah, those have been more in assisted living type facilities, whereas HUG, I actually saw HUG demonstrated at a trade show right just in March, late March, and I thought it was amazing, but I could see what you said. I can see that it could end up in the closet, that it could be cumbersome, but I'm interested if these were mostly in professional situations that he watched, or in family situations.
Yeah, the two research studies that he focused on were in elder care institutions or in home care, but it looks like they were people who provided home care for the 2021 study. And then his ethnographic research, I believe, was all spent in a nursing home. So yeah, it all focused on that professional caregiving world. It'd be interesting to see how much the difference between the home, whether you're a private person, versus kind of the staff world, where there's just a whole different economics of care. It'd be really interesting to tease that out.
Yes, yes. And I'm also really sensitive to the idea that the robot's taking more time. And you have mentioned before that when we try to bring tech into assisted living facilities, we have to be mindful, companies have to be mindful of what that means for the staff. The staff members. I mean, if you're going to fiddle around with devices all the time, or are you going to really help the residents? So I know this is a real issue that you have mentioned before as well.
Yes, exactly.
It sort of reminds me of the when they first brought out computers and into the workplace, and they said, you know, we're going to be saving so many trees because now everything's going to be in computers, and we're not going to have to print everything out and read everything and type from typewriters. And as it turns out, it generated far more paper than we expected, because everybody was printing things out, so that the unintended consequence was not really thought of. So I mean, it seems like technologically the robots are seen as, if they're not seen as an extension of person working there, but seen as either a replacement for an existing function that probably isn't going to work well.
I'm also really curious about the user testing. I mean, I guess the idea was to get it on the market and then see the results. You'd think that some of these issues would have come up if they'd done thorough, you know, UX design and user testing, but I don't know. I guess maybe it was the testing was done in a different way.
I noticed that LEQ was not one of the ones listed, and Debbie Howard, I think, is very familiar with LEQ. Debbie on testing, Debbie Howard, market research expert.
Yes, thanks, Linda. Yes, LEQ, Ellen, I take your point, and I'm quite interested about, you know, Pepper and Paro have been around for a long time, like years, 10 or more years. LEQ is a lot newer. I don't know how the testing was done. I have to assume they did some, but LEQ is a different story. I know they've done a lot of user experience design and that sort of thing. And yet still, even as a market researcher, you know, we can't know exactly what's going to happen, right? We can usually, these scales are done, these surveys and research, even ethnographic, they're very small scale, like 30 people maybe if you're lucky. And so then when you start rolling that out on a larger basis, and let's also remember that when we're testing, you know, we're in optimum conditions, right? We've onboarded the respondents, we've helped them to understand how to use it, we're watching them. And then, you know, you take that same product that worked fairly well in testing into a situation where you just are throwing it onto the floor without properly onboarding even the caregivers as to how to make it seamless. And, you know, things start falling apart pretty fast. You know, I always like to say, if our clients took all of our recommendations instead of cherry picking a few, it probably would work really well. But if you just cherry pick what you want to hear as a company when you're doing research, you may find that you have a little bit different result when you start rolling those out large scale. That's all I would say right now. I really admire LEQ because I have seen them firsthand do ethnographic research with us in Japan, decide that it was premature to launch in Japan, and come back to America and do 100-person in-home test in New York State. So, you know, they're actually, I think, doing it right. And I think they really are a good case study for how to approach this whole thing about user experience and design thinking. So, Ellen, I hope that, you know, answers some of your questions. It's hard to say, but I do know Paro and Pepper have been around forever. You know, like they're like really old robots. I'm sorry, just to go ahead and say that they're pretty old. They've been around for a while. Elizabeth?
Yes. So I'm also wondering, is it a cultural thing that could be getting in the way? And so this is from not from the caregiver side, but from the people that it's trying to support. And also, could it be that this particular age group at this point, which usually runs, at least here from what I've seen, to the like young to early to mid 80s, they necessarily may not have had tech in their lives and are not as comfortable with it. So could that make a difference? So that maybe, you know, 10 years from now, the people who are going to be using these robots might be more open to them.
You know, the researcher talked about this specifically. His perspective was that this population in Japan is so primed for robots, partly because there's been so much, he would probably call it propaganda, probably with his perspective, but there's been so much investment in communicating robots are safe, robots are awesome, robots are the way of the future, that he was under the impression that like this was the perfect audience for it. Like everybody's ready for the robots. And yet still, the research he quoted was that in 2019, only 10% of 9,000 elder care institutions had reported introducing a care robot. And in 2021, out of 444 people who provided home care, only 2% had experience with a care robot. So he's saying, okay, it's been this long, but they're still so small that they're in actually getting out into the field. So anyway, that was his perspective.
There's no question that Japan is far more welcoming to any kind of robotic influence. And I think that if it's not working there, we've got the issue is far beyond just the fact that it's a robot. I think that introducing similar machines to the other countries would be much more difficult. So in fact, the fact that it's having issues in Japan is probably an indicator of maybe missing the point on how we deploy these and what the functions are and how they interact with the caregiver. If they're seen as an adjunct or an assistant to a caregiver, that's one thing. If they're trying to replace caregiver capabilities, then you're just duplicating things and probably not being all that helpful.
Yeah, I really agree with everything that you just said, Ray, and Benjamin too, that you know, we do have a very open older population when it comes to thinking about robots, and there's a lot of positivity around it. So it is kind of it's concerning that those are not working well, and I think it goes back to, you know, we have to look at age groups and applications and onboarding of the caregivers themselves and lots of other things. It's not just I don't think it's an end game story that they don't work. I don't think that at all. I just think that you can't just plunk them down without proper onboarding and everything else. And maybe, Elizabeth, as you said, maybe as people get a little bit older, maybe they don't work as well. Maybe they work better in a younger, more youthful type setting. I had one other point that I was going to make, and I'm sorry, I lost it.
But while you're thinking, I'll make another point. Is that okay, Debbie? What this reminds me of is something that Benjamin Sermi has brought up in other meetings, and that is things that, you know, all this high tech stuff doesn't just work because you put it in. Oh, and we just lost Benjamin. But, and he did say he had to leave it at half past. But digital therapeutics, all of this remote patient monitoring that Medicare is paying for, so everybody's leaping into that, sometimes just is data overload. It's not necessarily helpful. It really depends. And you're right, the deployment, the onboarding, everything is so, so important. It isn't a build it and you're done kind of a thing. Debbie, did you find your note?
Yes, thank you. I just also wanted to make a point, and it piggybacks on yours too, Linda, that, you know, we're all really part of a grand experiment here with how to make this stuff work in our lives. And it's not just the oldest old, and it's not just those in care homes. We're all part of an experiment of getting this stuff to work in our lives and find out what really works best, what really helps versus what really distracts. So I love this opinion and this study, because I think we need to have, we need to be talking about these things and how does it work? How does it not work? How can we make it better? I think these are all really valid questions and points. Thank you.
And I really think there's a sort of a difference in how you look at robotics. Like if you have a iRobot that cleans your floor, you turn it on, it cleans the floor, right? There are very few robots that'll sit there and start dusting your curtains and your overhead fans. I mean, there's certain things that really work well for a robot, and there's certain tasks that maybe are less useful and probably more duplicative of a caregiver's what a caregiver does. I mean, you have a dishwasher that washes your dishes. You put the dishes in there and it washes them for you, but you don't have a machine that gathers your dishes around the room and organizes them and pre-washes them and puts them in the dishwasher itself. So there's certain functions that these robots could do that would be helpful to a caregiver. And there are certain functions that you're trying to maybe get too much out of them or do things that are getting in the way of actual caregiving.
Absolutely, Ray. And one thing we do not want is to, we can't completely replace the human touch. That's really not a good goal anyway. So I'm fine with this great information. And I think the challenge is to find out how to use the robots in the best way, as Ray mentioned. So fascinating topic. And of course, one of our favorites here in this room and even in our Thursday rooms. So this is Debbie and I'm done for now.
Yes, I'm really glad that we had that article, and it's certainly a very important topic for Debbie in so many ways as a Japan expert and a market research expert, because I think we've come to the conclusion for sure, and as Ellen Khalifa brought up, that market, really deep market research and testing with target markets is so, so important for any product, and especially in age tech. Okay, I want to, we just had one comment, Cindy Mullins from New Zealand, who has kindly shared our link, our room out into Twitter. Thank you, Cindy. Said, fascinating study, Benjamin. Thank you for being here, Cindy. I want to go to Ellen Khalifa, who has an article from Psychology Today that we didn't get to last week and had to slide to this week. Thank you for your patience, Ellen. And this is on yoga combating frailty in older adults. And it's also very relevant to this month, which is Osteoporosis Prevention Month. May is like the month of so many things. I put them all in the top of the pinned link. It's older American adults, mental health awareness, and strokes, and osteoporosis are all recognized in May. So, Ellen, if you could please go ahead. And Ellen is a tiny habits coach focused on health span. So this article is perfect for you. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think there is just so much that we can do. You know, we rely on the medical system for a lot, but as we age, I think there's so much that we can do ourselves. And that's the idea with health span. Excuse me, it's extending that healthy middle as long as possible in life. So I was very happy to see this. This was a systematic review of 33 studies, but more than half of adults in the United States over age 80 experience frailty that hampers their ability to cope with everyday life. So frailty is a complex condition that involves a whole variety of physical and mental factors that include walking, balance, cognitive impairment, and other chronic health problems. Frailty reduces endurance levels, makes it more difficult to live independently, reduces quality of life, and increases the risk of dying sooner. So this review was published in the Annals of Internal Medicine, and it asked the question, can yoga help to prevent or improve frailty? Researchers reviewed 33 randomized controlled studies on the benefits of yoga for people over 65. In total, there were more than 2,300 participants age 60 or older. And the review found that participating in a regular yoga practice improved walking speed and leg strength, which are two important measures of frailty. Walking speed was an especially important measure because earlier research showed that slower walking speeds are associated with an increased risk of dying in older adults. Sorry, it's allergy season here. The studies in the review included two types of yoga, Iyengar-based practices, which use modifications and props to help people with all mobility levels participate, and two, chair-based yoga. The findings suggest that Iyengar yoga may be more effective because it involves more standing and balance compared to chair-based yoga. Julia Lowenthal, the lead author of the study, says, there's a potential for movement-based mind-body practices to be really helpful for promoting healthy aging over the lifespan because they provide both physical and cognitive health benefit, but also because they have a spillover effect that can lead to having a healthier lifestyle overall. It's never too late to start a yoga practice or exercise regimen to help with your overall health status in your later years. So a regular yoga practice offers other benefits as well. Previous research shows that yoga is effective at addressing the symptoms of depression. One systematic review found that the more yoga participants practiced each week, the fewer symptoms they showed. And an earlier review found that yoga is an effective tool for pain relief. So the take-home message is, practice yoga even later in life. It helps to combat frailty, which is this, again, this complex condition. So this it can reduce the risk of falling, hospitalization, and dying among older adults. And just to say, on Osteoporosis Awareness Month, I live with osteoporosis, and the statistics for the U.S. are 1 in 2 women and up to 1 in 4 men will break a bone in their lifetime due to this low bone density. For women, the incidence is greater than that of heart attack, stroke, and breast cancer combined. So strength, balance, flexibility, all help to prevent falls. And there is a physician who specializes in this. His name is Lauren Fishman, MD, and apparently he's on the faculty at Columbia, and he did studies with Harvard, and his techniques of these 13 bone density yoga poses was shown to reverse bone loss. So I will stop there, but I was very glad to see this article. Thanks.
I love anything that helps us to explain to people that they really need to do yoga, because I am a big yoga enthusiast. So is Ray. So, and Elizabeth?
Yep, me too. It's all about the yoga. Love it.
And, you know, having scientific proof that it's good for you is just super helpful. So everybody wants to see those studies. Thank you so much for finding this.
Yeah, the other thing I was interested in is that it was in Psychology Today, and I think there is this overall cumulative effect as you start doing something that, you know, with a body mind connection to it, it spills over into all these other aspects of your life. So yeah, I thought this was a great article, and I do those. I don't do all 13 every day, but I do those bone density yoga poses because, again, it's stressing the bones. So holding poses for between 30 and 72 seconds, actually, the stress that it puts on the bone helps the osteoblasts build more bone cells. So yeah, it's great.
Thank you so much. Anybody else?
Yeah, I think that what's sort of interesting with frailty, and I've seen this with a lot of people as they get older. As they get older, they get less mobile, they less moving around. And with a lot of other kinds of activity that might build bone density or improve your minimize your frailty, they take a lot of effort and a lot of muscle strength that you may not have anymore. Whereas introducing yoga, even old as people are in upper age, can really, really help, because you're going to be able to introduce an activity that you can do no matter what age you are, and you're going to see benefits, because as you go through yoga, you definitely can see marked improvement, and it's measurable.
It's also been around, you know, like forever. And there's so many different types of yoga. And people tell me, oh, well, I can't do yoga because I'm not flexible. But that's how you get flexible. And depending on my mood, I will go do different yogas for what I'm looking for, whether I'm looking for a workout or to chill. So there's just so many options out there. And if you say you're not flexible enough, you absolutely need yoga. And it all takes time. And our bodies are different every single day.
Yeah, I've done a lot of different kinds of yoga, and I found that yin works for me because I like to hold poses for a long time period to let the muscles and the ligaments and tendons sort of stretch out a bit. So you're giving yourself time to settle into it. Whereas opposed to a workout, I can get a workout from tennis. I don't really need the yoga for that. But everybody can have their own style, and I think having more than one, being exposed to any number of different styles really, really helps.
Great. Okay. Thank you. All right. So we had one more on, well, I'm sorry, we're really, really close to the end here. Debbie also had something on fitness that I would have liked to do today, which is grip strength. Ray? I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. Ray is saying to slide him. So I got it. We have Gary got slid last week as well. But Elizabeth is going to have to be out for the next 3 weeks. So if you'll forgive me, I'm going to put Elizabeth Magaillon Fleury next. Elizabeth, oh gosh, Elizabeth, would you please introduce yourself?
No worries, going on right darling. Now. No worries. Hi, everyone. I'm Elizabeth Magaillon Fleury with Life's Encore Planning, and I serve adults who are struggling to care for and support their aging loved ones. So at this week, I was actually out of in my hometown a couple of weeks ago in San Jose, California, and I had the opportunity to read the local Mercury News, and it was an actual paper, not online, so I love that. And I think it was fate that I was able to read this article, and it was from the Mercury News, West Valley Mission College community colleges grow adult curriculum. And as I was doing that, I also found another article from regarding community colleges and reviewing them as well. So I'm going to kind of combine these two. The other one was programs for senior citizens and retirees at community colleges from communitycollegereview.com. Community colleges across California have seen an almost 10% decrease in their student population. So they're changing their perspective on how to serve that population. They will be adding even more opportunities for older adults with new certificate programs that can help boost employment opportunities if they want. West Valley Mission College Community District is the first to be designated age-friendly by the World Health Organization due to their commitment to incorporating people of all ages into their community. My Uncle Manuel was actually an art teacher at Mission College in San Jose. Older adults are getting other incentives for going to college, such as from Terra Community College in Fremont, Ohio. They offer individuals 60 and older free tuition. Having older adults in their classes brings new perspective and experience to share with others. This creates a more well-rounded classroom atmosphere. And the article talks about, you know, how everybody like really enjoys it. And so that makes it also a very intergenerational experience. Older adults also going back to community college can take courses that are enjoyable, that not necessarily, they weren't practical back when they were trying to enhance their career opportunities. So now this is an opportunity for them to take classes in yoga or art, you know, or movies and anything like that, that maybe they wouldn't have been able to do previously. This also gives more opportunity for reaching out to people with online courses, and that can be very helpful for those who are homebound. So I was really excited to hear about this and the opportunities that the community colleges are putting out there. And to be honest, the community colleges are going to have way more opportunities as we go forward, bringing in older adults as opposed to younger adults. So I think they're on the right path, and I'm loving it. In closing, seeking an education, learning a new language, taking an art course, or learning about world history,
whatever one studies stimulates the brain, opens the mind, and enriches one's life. And with that, I'm done. And thank you for letting me present today. Back to you, Debbie or Linda.
I have a quick comment on that. I am part of what's called the Modern Elder Academy, which calls itself the world's first, midlife wisdom school. And what they call it is not lifelong learning, but long life learning, because cognitive function and motivation really do extend your life.
Thanks for sharing that, Ellen. Yes, I've heard about that. And I love, you know, turning it around that way, talking about it. Thanks.
And thanks to both of you for those articles. That's actually another area where we know that if we eat the right foods and we do exercise and yoga, and the evidence is in that all of these things really, really make a big difference as we age and creating that health span, as Ellen has mentioned before. And I love that long life learning, Ellen. That's wonderful. And certainly remaining active and learning new things is another activity that really, really helps. This is Debbie, and I'm done for now.
And why it's good for a clubhouse. So, because we're getting mentally stimulated, at least in our show, it depends on the
yes.
show, but this is certainly a mentally stimulating
Absolutely.
Show. Thank you. Okay. So we are going to Gary Bard, unless anybody had a last minute thing. And I have to mention that Gregory Keyes, put into the chat MEA. Yay. What's MEA? Was that something that just got mentioned? That was
yes.
the abbreviation for your say it again, Ellen.
It's called the Modern Elder Academy, founded by Chip Connolly, who's famous for his book Wisdom at Work, where he joined Airbnb. He was 50, everyone else was 25, so he wrote this best-selling book. But he founded this Modern Elder Academy that does both online and learning at their locations. So the first world's first midlife wisdom school, they call it.
Thank you for that. Gregory, I just followed you. Welcome to our Rethinking Aging show. Thank you. Did you know each other? Ellen, you and Gregory?
No, I haven't met Gregory, so but I'd be interested in hearing more about his involvement. I was so motivated, not just by the session I went to, which is in, they had one location in Baja, Mexico. They're opening up another in Santa Fe this year, but because I have a very active local alumni chapter, and then I got tapped to be one of the co-leads for this year. So I found it's made a real difference in my life, just finding this tribe of people who all have the same attitudes towards growing older.
That's great. Hey, Elizabeth, may I ask you, what was the geographic area again, which was designated as the age-friendly area by WHO?
It's San Jose, California.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Community College of West Valley and Mission College Community District, and it's in the Bay Area. It overlaps San Jose, Santa Clara, and Saratoga.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're all going to be hearing more about this age-friendly designation by WHO. We are hearing more about that every day, and we're actually going to have some roundtable discussions about that at the Independent Aging Conference in Japan in mid-October. So we have some folks coming from Geneva, et cetera, who are going to be talking about that designation. I had not known about that until a few months ago, so I'm really interested in it. Thank you.
Is there a link that somebody would like to put in the chat? Ellen? Elizabeth? Debbie?
Sorry,
okay.
No. I can help
that
one yet. But...
Thank you. Thank you so much. That would be helpful. Thank you. Okay, I want to make sure to get to Gary Barg. We slid his article last week. So I want to introduce Gary Barg, who is the managing editor of the caregiver.com and the head of Caregiver Media Group. Gary Barg, please.
Well, it's not like me not to want to talk, but I'd like to keep the theme going. What I want to talk about, it's timely, but it could wait, because I think, Linda, you had another exercise conversation that you wanted to have. Am I correct?
Well, Debbie had grip strength, and that Debbie Howard.
So
Debbie, you want to do it?
Well,
yeah,
that's very
generous of you, Gary. It would put everything together.
I need all the help I can get at my age. Give me a break.
I think grip strength is fascinating, but go ahead, Gary.
I do want to say, and I know Wayne's here, that we did a soft launch to the winners late last week, and we're launching to the universe our 22nd anniversary caregiver-friendly award recipients tomorrow, I believe, on the website and out through the universe. And I just think that it's, for us, Caregiver Friendly is a training, it's a concept, it's a way of life. But to be able to award these companies, organizations, producers, media, the product manufacturers who really put the caregivers first is an honor for us to be able to do. So that launches full scope tomorrow. So that's all I wanted to say. And then next week we could talk about my article, because it's really the core of everything, which is who you vote for, why you vote for them, and what they're supposed to do for us as family caregivers.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Gary. And we have in the chat, Gregory Keyes followed up saying, I'm just following Chip and his wisdom. And Cindy Mullins, I'll be in Japan in October, Debbie, so add me to the event mailing list. And Ellen said to Gregory, that's how I started as well. And Wayne Crawley with a thumbs up. Thank you to everybody. Okay, Debbie, can you please do your grip strength article and then go into the summary if we don't have any discussion?
Sure. Happy to do that. And I'd also just like to give a shout out to Wayne Crawley in the audience, because he was one of the caregiver-friendly product awardees, I believe, with Novair Products, the adjustable shelves.
Indeed.
If I'm not mistaken.
He was. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. So my article for today is about losing grip strength and slowing down may be dementia warning signs. And we talk about this all the time, and it's really interesting. But again, we love the facts and figures. And I think, you know, it's in the interest of time, I'll just recap that we lose muscle mass as we get older. By the age of 50, we lose 10% of our body's muscle. And then we continue to lose muscle as we get older. And it probably hastens at that point. This study shows that, or tried to interrelate a loss of muscle mass or muscle strength with the beginning of dementia in older adults. And this is really important, because none of us want dementia, that's for sure. And two ways to measure this is through grip strength and how quick and balanced you can get up from a chair. So I have a funny story about some doctors who I know in Japan. Actually, they happen to be in Japan, and they happen to be orthopedic surgeons, and they all are very obsessed with grip strength, because they need really strong grip strength to be able to do what they do in the orthopedic surgery room. And so I became aware of grip strength through them. I have very poor grip strength, and I must tell you, this is also kind of a funny story, but when I found myself struggling with opening a bottle of wine is when the alarm bells went off. So I'm just going to go ahead and admit that. And I've been trying to work on that. Like when with my left, thanks for the laugh, Stacy. I started, for example, I noticed with my left hand, it's weaker than the right as well. And so now I've started like trying to open bottles and do things with my left hand so I can, you know, hopefully build that strength a little bit. But I'm thinking that I might get some kind of special exercise device for that, because I don't want to lose my grip strength. And I certainly don't want to, you know, do poorly on a test at the doctor's with it. So one thing they can do at your doctor, you can do a grip strength at your doctor. They can measure your grip strength, and it would be good to do this as soon as you can. It's done with a tool called a dynamometer or dynamometer maybe. You hold it in your hand and squeeze it with all your strength, and it measures the amount of force used. It's a really easy thing to determine. Would be a great thing for us all to have a benchmark on, just like we do bone density or mammograms or anything else that we do. And the other thing we can do is there's a test called the TUG test. And this is it stands for, let me see if I can get the acronym for you. It's TUG. I can't find the acronym now. Sorry. The timed up and go test. And that makes sense, because what we're trying to do is see how from a sitting position in a normal chair, how you can stand up, walk to a line about 10 feet away from the chair, turn around, walk back to the chair, and sit back down in the chair. And the doctor can watch to see your walking, your gait, your speed, and your posture and balance. So those two things are really, really important for us all to be asking for when we go to see the doctors in our annual checkups. And I think that's probably, in the interest of time, all I'll say about this. Just be aware that that is something that we all need to think about and be benchmarking and testing on an ongoing basis, because it could be an indicator that that you're getting closer to having issues with dementia. And, you know, anything we can do to get an advance warning on that is good. And this ties in anyway with being strong, as Ellen mentioned, with the yoga and making sure our strength and endurance and flexibility is good. So with that, I'm just going to move right into the summary. I'm going to go first to Ellen's article, because it ties to that article that I just did on grip strength and standing and walking and balancing. The article.
Can I interrupt you for 1 second?
Absolutely.
Ray and I are fans of TRX. And I would say that TRX is really good for your grip strength. Another thing is kettlebell training. There's things that you can do with a kettlebell. Ray, can you just say a sentence or two about kettlebells?
Yeah, I was going to mention both. I was going to mention both of those as well. TRX straps have handles, and you're using your body weight, so you have to hold on to the handles in order to do any exercise at all. So you tend to make sure that you keep your grip strength up. Kettlebells, you know, even very light kettlebells, 4 or 5 pounds, have a little handle on top. And instead of holding a dumbbell horizontally, when you hold a kettlebell, you're eccentrically loading it. So you have to grip that handle in order to lift the weight. So it's sort of like lifting a teapot instead of lifting, you know, a ball. And it allows you to maintain your grip strength as you are moving your arm with a light weight through space. I use it with heavier weights, but you can do it with lightweight as well. And because you're holding that little horn of the kettlebell, it allows you have to grip it in order to keep it from flopping side to side. So both of those are very, very helpful in trying to build grip strength, which, again, grip strength is a indicator of general strength, because if you can grip, you also are using your forearm muscles, your arm muscles to move up and down. So, I mean, it's not just your hand. It's really more an indicator of overall strength in general.
Those are great tips, Linda and Ray. And you know, it reminds us all, I think, of how we could just make a couple of small tweaks in our fitness programs to help alleviate some of these issues going forward. So, yeah, I love that. And can we just have a quick explanation of what TRX is? I do not know what that is.
Great.
Hey, TRX is a resistance system, which is a pair of straps that are tied usually to an anchor. You can also get them for home use, where you connect them to the top of a door. And what you do is you have handles in these two straps, and you can lean back, and you can use that your body weight as the resistance. So you change the angle of your body, and that adjusts how much weight you put into those straps. You can be standing up almost straight up, and you have a little bit of weight, or you can be leaning away from the anchor. And put much more weight into it. And you can also do push-ups on that. You can do pull-ups. You can do squats, all using that as a help to stabilize you, but also to pull against. So you're using your whole upper body. And the general way of using TRX is to keep your body in a plank position or straight, keep your back straight, which then engages all of your posterior muscles, so that your glutes and your lower back and your hamstrings all get exercised at once. So it's sort of a way of using your body strength, your body weight as the resistance variable. So it's super easy. It's very portable. You can just walk around. You can put them in a bag and carry them with you. they're very inexpensive, and it gives you the same benefit as lifting weights.
That sounds great. That sounds great. And I know Linda will mention the upcoming rooms at the end today, but we do have fitness on the 25th of May. So we've moved right into that. It's such an important area of everything that we talk about here. Ellen,
thank you for mentioning that, Debbie. If we have a couple that we've identified, but if anyone has something, a fitness app, a fitness company, or somebody that they would like to introduce for the 25th, we would really appreciate that. Go ahead, Debbie. I'm sorry.
Great. Thank you. That's a great idea. So Ellen Khalifa, our Tiny Habits coach, mentioned, and I'm sorry, Ellen had to leave. We knew she had a hard stop, but Ellen found a great article about yoga and how it combats frailty in older adults. And, you know, the idea here is to extend that healthy middle and have a longer health span, not just living longer, but living healthy longer. So this study that the article reports on was a 2,300 person study, and it absolutely showed that yoga, whether it's Iyengar or chair based, really has an impact on reducing the risk of falling and even of dying, because it absolutely helps you to have better balance and strength, flexibility, and endurance. And it even helps with depression and pain relief. So, and one other thing that I thought was really interesting, for, because this month is Osteoporosis Awareness Month, is that yoga can actually help reverse bone loss. So we're big yoga fans in this room. It's never too late to start. Start doing your yoga now, I think is the message here. And third, we heard from Elizabeth Magallon-Fleury about, from Life's Encore Planning, with another great article and thing for us to remember as we get older. This article was about community colleges gaining or growing their older adult curriculums. And I think it's a really interesting story. We know that keeping the mind active is very important. One thing that this article points out is that there are a group of community colleges around the San Jose area, including Santa Clara and Sonata, I think. I might have that wrong. And they have been designated as age-friendly cities by the WHO, and that's for their inclusionary practices, not only teaching these courses, but actually having older adults teach some of the courses. So I wanted just to flag up that age-friendly cities thing. Linda, I couldn't get the link in there yet, but I'll try to do that right at the end while you're doing the close. And Ellen mentioned the Modern Elder Care Academy, which we also want to flag up as a great institution. Just a really interesting discussion about how helpful these things really are. So I believe, oh, and Benjamin Sermi, let me not forget Benjamin Sermi's great article from an MIT review, and the UK-based author James Wright, who I believe his book title is Why Robots Cannot Save Japan. And he has done an amazing ethnographic research piece of body of work that really shows that although Japanese society and older people are quite open-minded to robots, in the year 2023, it's not working as well as we might hope. And his hypothesis is that in care facilities where they had studied the use of robots, and they had several different examples, including some you've heard of, like Pepper, the life-size robot that does exercise, Hug, and Paro. These robots have not been, it's not that they're not successful, it's that they require the professional caregivers to actually do things along with them, or maybe fiddle around with getting them going. And so the distraction of the operation of the robots vies to some extent with the really very real issues in Japan of why don't we just pay caregivers more so we can get better caregivers and more career involvement, and why don't we consider immigration? If you're involved in Japan at all, you know these are three, it's like a three-pronged problem that, you know, it's true, robots can't solve all of those problems, but certainly, you know, we in the business of age tech and even in market research like I am, I do believe that they have a place and we are going to find our way. But it's really interesting to read a proper study where it's proven that, the robots and the operation of the robots are sucking off time for human engagement. And that is not where we want to go. So I loved this article, Benjamin, and Benjamin had to leave a little early as well. But just another amazing pull of articles today. Thank you so much for being here, everyone. This is Debbie Howard, and I'm done for now.
Thank you so much, Debbie Howard. I have things in the chat that I want to read. Teresa Valenzuela said, absolutely, as a wheelchair user for 31 years, I'm beginning to lose my grip. And Teresa says, stress handballs work too. Laura Morrison says, TRX straps and kettlebells, great ideas. Stacy Eisenberg, we have TRX straps hanging from a tree out front, and they get used often by us and our neighbors. Laura Morrison, Teresa, I love using a big ball for balance and smaller balls with weight. I don't know if that works for a wheelchair user, but those are good overall. Stacy Eisenberg, if anyone would like a recommendation for hand strip strengthener, send me a DM. My son has tried them all. Stacy, we have to find a way to share this for everybody. Maybe you can write a blog post or something. The son is a baseball pitcher, and Roger Annenson is applauding. Thank you, Roger. Cindy Mullins, another great room with amazingly helpful info. Thanks, all. And Teresa said, it does for me. Okay, so Teresa, you're talking about the balls for balance and smaller balls with weight. I'm so sorry. Then I'm making you yes, she is. That does work. Okay, great. Awesome. I also put into the chat the link to Gary Barg's Caregiver Friendly Awards, which is caregiver.com/CG-community/caregiver-friendly-awards, which I am encouraging him to put on the top navigation of his website.
and he's gone. Okay, so I can't ask him to retort to that. I'm going to badger him till he makes that easier to find on his website. Right, Wayne? Because Wayne wants his thing to be found on Gary's site. So I want to remind everybody that we have two rooms a week, Tuesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, and that's 3 to 4 Pacific time. And on Thursdays, we are 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern time, 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific time. And on Thursdays, we have a different topic every week. This coming Thursday, we are honoring Mental Health Awareness Month. And our expert speakers are covering two major themes, social isolation for older adults and self-care for caregivers. And we have Beverly Clow with the Verbena app, Albert Wang with Commend, which is for rare disease community support, Carol Lawrenson, who's the creator of the Kind Space app, Danielle Pally, who you can find on Insight Timer and Spring Health. And she does a lot of work as a coach with meditation and so forth. And Elise Marie Collins, who is a wellness coach, yoga coach, and author. So please come back on Thursday. We hope to see you then, and we hope to see you every Tuesday for our terrific News for the Ages. Thank you so much to our reporters and to our audience. The audience has just been so great in bringing suggestions and comments. Elisa also is saying, great room, very informative. And Debbie found the link and put it up. Thank you so much, Debbie, for age-friendly cities framework from extranet.who.int, and that's age-friendly world / age-friendly cities framework. Thank you so much for that, Debbie. All righty, thank you so much to everybody. Does anybody have one last minute thing? If not, we're going to go ahead and unmute and say goodbye and see you soon. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Take care, everyone. See you soon.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Take care.
Thank you. Oh, wait a second. Just one second. Teresa's dying to say something. Go ahead, Teresa. I'm bringing you up for 1 second here. Teresa, go ahead. Or maybe you didn't mean to raise your... There you are. Go ahead, Teresa. Quickly. I'd have to unmute on the bottom right.
Shoot. I was just saying goodbye, guys. I'm sorry.
Oh!
Great, wonderful group. Have a great afternoon from San Diego, California. Teresa Valenzuela here.
But Teresa, you do use balls for balance and so forth. You just get on it from the wheelchair and get by. You're able to move yourself around.
Yep, I'm partially paralyzed from the waist down, so I can use the big blue ball. I have a big blue ball that I use, and then I'm able to use a little balls, the weighted balls. And so yes, I'm able to do that. And it makes working out, exercising, staying fit. A lot of hydration, guys. A lot of hydration.
I'm glad that we reminded you about your grip strength, because obviously you've got to work on that too.
Sure do. See you guys Thursday.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you for all your support to the community. Goodbye, Absolutely. Everybody.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.